Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's time for our weekly reporters roundtable.
As governor, I'll create jobs by helping small businesses grow, restore cuts to firefighters, police, and teachers. Let's start supporting the middle class for a change, not just the wealthy few, because Ohio was meant for all of us.
That was Democratic gubernatorial nominee Ed Fitzgerald in his first television ad of the campaign. I guess it's safe to say he stays largely positive, sticking to a pro-middle-class mantra. Joining us today to talk about that and more is Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Good morning.
Also, Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Is this 3 weeks in a row?
Just two.
Okay, all right. And Joe Ingles of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
So I say stays largely positive because he doesn't attack his opponent. He talks about what he's going to do. But, Joe, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, it probably is a very good introduction to Ed Fitzgerald because you're seeing him on one hand, you know, looking like he's, a leader and listening to the people and trying to define him in a positive way. But you don't hear his name much in the piece. I'm not sure how many times you hear it in the ad. I think maybe once.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not really familiar with Ed Fitzgerald, I'm not so sure that once you see that commercial that you know any more about him than you did before.
Yeah, he's running for governor, and he wants to help the middle class and small businesses. So does everyone. That's the thing. And we actually had, we have a Facebook group, a Greater Cincinnati Politics Facebook group, and we had some local Democratic, one was an operative and another one was an elected official, kind of say when we posted a little story about the ad, you know, this could run with anyone. Mm-hmm. And these are Democrats saying that, you know,
right.
So.
Yeah, it's fairly boilerplate Democrat type of language and messaging. We're for the middle class. We're for the little guy. The Republicans who are controlling things, they only want to do things to help the wealthy, and we need to change that. So that is pretty, I think Chrissy's right, that's pretty standard. Standard stuff, but I think he's got some things he can point to that he's going to argue that he would change and that he would do differently, like tax policy that would fall in line with that. Mm-hmm. I did think it was interesting. He does not mention Governor Kasich.
Mm-hmm.
When he campaigns, he often talks about restoring cuts to local governments and to schools. Here, he mentions teachers, police, and firefighters.
Right.
He doesn't mention local governments and schools. He makes it more personal, and I'm sure that's not a subtle way of coming across saying, you know, by the way, remember Senate Bill 5.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, he does make a point of like, why don't we support these people?
Well, and I think, honestly, I think that's where we're going to see it go, if I'm going to put on my little, you know,
you think this is a building block?
I do, because I think what he's trying to do is lay the groundwork to talk about Senate Bill 5 and tell people, hey, remember when you were out there rallying for, you know, your rights on the State House? He hasn't changed. Governor Kasich hasn't changed. He's still that guy. You know, that's what Ed Fitzgerald wants to get out there in his campaign. I think he wants to talk about women's issues. And if you listen to this, it sets the stage for that. You know, it kind of sets the stage for a lot of different issues that he wants to get out there. And I think, you know, from a standpoint of laying the groundwork, it probably is good because it is generic. But then again, it just doesn't say much.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's Monday morning. That means it's time for our weekly reporter roundtable. If you have a question or comment about state government politics, we're talking about the governor's race right now. Have you seen the Ed Fitzgerald television ad? What do you think? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. All right, so a building block. Of course, Senate Bill 5, once again to remind people, Senate Bill 5 was enacted, and mm-hmm. it would have taken away the collective bargaining rights for public employees, specifically police and firefighters.
Teachers,
and it was overturned by the voters in a statewide referendum
right.
the following November. That was issue two. So so the next step then in this would be Senate Bill 5, but is there a point where you have to do that classic bio ad? Even Kasich, after almost 4 years in office, did a bio ad during the primary season to remind people or to underscore himself among certain voters, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense to do the bio ad now. If he's going to do it, it needed to be his first ad, which it was. So, but, you know.
But do you, oh, Kasich, or did you think of Fitzgerald's ad as a bio ad?
I kind of thought about it as a bio ad because, you know, he's talking about what he's done, you know, that kind of thing. He was, you know, Ohio is for all of us. This is my philosophy. This is who
I am. But it doesn't say anything about his
background. I think it's more philosophical than, I don't know if anyone would have any idea where he's from.
No.
Why is he qualified to run for governor? Honestly,
did his dad carry a mailbag or not?
You know, these are very important things. Did he grow up in Ohio?
Do people care?
No, they do. And I think that, here's the problem for Fitzgerald. He doesn't have the money.
Right.
I mean, this is his first ad. Kasich has run three, and the RGA has run one or two also on his behalf.
Republican governors.
So the problem is they have to pick their messaging very carefully. Right. They don't have the ability to just throw up ads and say whatever.
I could plan an ad campaign for him if they only had
$6 million.
Right. But I mean, he does have things he probably should be talking about in some of these ads at some point. The fact that he was an FBI agent, the fact that he's the county executive up there in Cuyahoga County, which, by the way, just landed the RNC and got LeBron back. So there are things that I think he can talk about, and you know, basically I've tried to turn around the corruption up there and that type of thing. But again, you've got to have the money to be able to put out these messages, and I, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not in the campaign. I don't know that he does, but there are things he could be talking about.
Yeah, so Kasich has a 5-to-1 cash advantage over Ed Fitzgerald, and also the Republican Governors Association, and given that we have a majority of Republican governors, is in a good position here to throw in money on Kasich's behalf. So Fitzgerald, he has a money problem, and from the start for his campaign, this has been about turnout, about reminding loyal Democratic voters to get to the polls.
And that's what this ad was aimed at.
Mm-hmm.
The people who need to remember will know.
You have to get out the vote.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, there are more registered Democrats in the state of Ohio than Republicans, but they tend to vote less in off-year elections.
Yes, Democrats.
Fewer numbers.
Democrats always have trouble getting out their vote in the non-presidential years, and that's always been their struggle, and it will continue to be this year as well.
Yep.
Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Don.
Yes, I had a question about the nominee Fitzgerald. What his feelings were about the death penalty, and if he'd care to annul it.
I don't know what his feelings
are. Ed Fitzgerald supports the death penalty.
Okay,
he is a former prosecutor, and he supports the death penalty.
That's what he's told me too.
All right, that's it, Don. Thanks for your call. And Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you have any more details on Mr. Fitzgerald's plans for the college savings plan. I'm an independent voter. I'm certainly not behind the Tea Party at all, but I can't say that I'm firmly behind Mr. Fitzgerald yet. Last time he was on, he mentioned this college savings plan, but he really didn't put much detail to it. I wondered if you have any more detail about that. And what I'm getting at is it sounds kind of like a flexible spending plan, and parts of that are good and parts of it are not good.
Kind of like a health.
Yeah.
You mean before taxes type of thing. Okay. Okay.
And I'm wondering if you have any more details on this college savings plan. He says every child in Ohio will have a college savings plan.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you have more details on that yet.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yep.
I covered that. I'm not sure that I can shed a lot of details.
Kicks it off with $100, right?
Yeah, everybody kicks it off, and then it would be when they're very young, you know, going into kindergarten, and then it would accrue over time. And then the idea is at the end of it that each child who graduates an Ohio school would have that money to go to college. I can tell you, though, anyone who's tried to put a kid through college, even if you put $100 in every month for that child's entire school career, you're going to be short on money, unless your kid's getting,
Want to talk about it.
A lot of scholarships, because it's expensive to go to college. Mm-hmm. So, $100 certainly is not going to be something that's going to be the answer to college.
Was that the
affordability
sum total of what the plan involves?
Yeah,
They've done it in Cuyahoga County.
Right.
Doesn't cost a lot of money. I think it's $20 million. Yeah. I think. That's annually $20 million. Mm-hmm. And your parent or grandparent can put in money to it. Mm-hmm. He envisions schools using it as a financial education tool. Mm. Everyone has this, so we can do things with our savings accounts. We can look at the accounts. You know, I'm not an teacher, so I'm at a loss as to exactly what you would do with this. But and he says that, you know, it kind of puts it into, from kindergarten, it puts it into a positive, attainable goal. You are going to go to college and you already have a savings account. However, this state is not going to be able to pay for this child's college education with $100.
Yeah, that's for sure. And even if, like I said, even if you put $100 in, after the state puts $100 in, you put $100 in a month for the rest of the time that kid's in school, you're still not going to have enough money to even, you know, put them through the first year at Ohio State, for example. It takes a lot of savings, and people make a lot about these programs and talk a lot about these programs. And while they're helpful, they may pay for your books or they may help out, mm-hmm. they're certainly not the panacea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one problem that Ed Fitzgerald and, well, any any elected leader has right now when it comes to the college tuition issue is that it is already outrageously expensive.
Yeah.
There is nothing, and there's very little that can be done about that, mm-hmm. At least that anybody's willing to do about that. You can try to hold down tuition increases, but again, it's too late. It's already way, way expensive to send your child to college. And so, you know, it's very hard to come up with any kind of a substantial idea that's going to, have a major impact on the affordability at this point, because that horse has left the barn. And, I just don't know what you do that, you know, at least that's going to be politically palatable.
Yeah, all state universities, but a couple, raise their tuition this year, for this upcoming year. I think Ohio State was one of three that didn't for in-state students, but did for out-of-state students. It's just going up, up, up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm all depressed. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanks for staying with us. That got kind of depressing and low. We were talking about the cost of higher ed in Ohio. It's certainly not the worst in the country. It's certainly not the best. If you have a question or comment for our panel of State House reporters, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. The LeBron James impact, you brought it up, Jim Siegel. What is a candidate for governor trying to link himself to LeBron James's return to Cleveland all about?
Well, I think he put out some kind of a estimate on the impact, if I recall, and it's something like $50 million a year. And I think the Cleveland Plain Dealer, or whatever it's calling itself these days, you did a study about 2010 and I think found it was more like $200 million a year. So, I mean, it's a feel-good thing. Obviously, you know, Ed Fitzgerald, I don't think can claim a lot of credit for bringing LeBron James back. I think he can claim credit, some of the credit, for bringing the RNC, the Republican National Convention, to Cleveland. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of just a feel-good thing for him, I think he can use it to show this is another thing that's going to help Cleveland and help...
It was a good week for Cleveland.
Yes.
It was.
An amazing week for Cleveland.
Yeah. I mean, on a national level, in ways.
Maybe one of the best weeks Cleveland has had in decades. It was just, Cleveland got attention you can't buy that kind of attention. So,
yeah.
Very fun. I mean, my husband and I don't even like the NBA. And he was like, we're going to go up and watch LeBron. This is great. You know, so.
He saw
Cleveland,
LeBron
here
James.
We come.
Right. Well, Cleveland had, for a long time, had been the butt of so many jokes. And our, let's face it, our Cleveland sports teams, they're not what we'd like them to be by any means. And so, you know, having some hope there, that also adds to it because, you know, when LeBron James was with the Cavs before, the Cavs were pretty good. And then when he left, you know, the team was in such a bind because when he pulled out, they had kind of structured their whole team around him mm-hmm. being there. Mm-hmm. Then he leaves, they're at the end of the, you know, the time when they can actually get someone in there. They're very weak. And they're just now at the point where they're recovering from that, and now he's coming back. So, you know, they could have the potential to be very good, and I think that's a lot. That gives a lot of hope to a lot of people because, quite frankly, Ohio loves their sports teams, and Cleveland is, you know, the place where a lot of, especially Central Ohioans, mm-hmm. Their allegiance lies there. So mm-hmm. it's nice to think that you might have a team that, you know, plays into the season and is a contender. You know, mm-hmm. wouldn't it be great if you could watch the Browns, you know, in January? Wouldn't that be awesome? You know, I mean, you could still watch them, but I mean, watch them and have it mean something.
Right.
So, you know, those kind of things, I think, play a lot in minds of Ohioans because for a long time they haven't had that hope.
Funny how sports and politics play so strongly in this state.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, speaking of which, imagine a 2016 where we have both the Republican National Convention and the NBA playoffs, dare I say, finals in the same month, possibly overlapping. I mean, that was one of the things as they looked into whether they could use the baseball field for.
Right.
In case they get LeBron and in case they're in the finals, you know, so dear heavens, it's going to be crazy. But
here we are talking sports. Rick in Grandview, you're on the air. You calculated your college investment and got $32,000 per student. Tell me what you're talking about here.
I was thinking compound interest.
Okay.
If you were going to put in the bank, which you're not going to get, savings-wise, you're not going to get 4%. Mm-hmm. But most people are not going to put it in savings. They're going to put it in the market. Mm-hmm. And I think 4% annually is a conservative interest rate. If you start with $100 and you put $100 in monthly, compounded monthly for 18 years on that bankrate.com, I get $32,000, basically $31,764.
Wow. Well, you're not talking 18 years there because he's talking putting it in at kindergarten. So you're basically talking 12 years of education anyway. So
that's $18,000.
Yeah, it's not. Unfortunately, I don't believe that these children could take the money and do whatever they want with it.
I don't think so.
It's a set account.
Oh,
It is a savings account. So I don't know the details.
But hypothetically, if you were to just take your own money and do that,
sure. Right.
Oh yeah, you'd do better putting.
And
that'd
get you through about a year and a half, maybe, of a moderately priced state school.
Whew.
Yeah. All right, Rick.
So, thank you. I didn't know the details either.
No, that's okay. And it's just a little, until we see this in action, you know, none of us asked what bank they're planning on investing this all in, right?
So,
okay.
Thank
Thanks
you.
A lot. Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Joining me in the studio today, Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch, Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Enquirer, and Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. If you have a question or comment about state government or politics, what's in the news, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Governor Kasich was shoulder-to-shoulder with Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman last week. They were promising state money to expand pre-kindergarten education in Columbus. Was this good politics? What do you make of it? Some people were grousing about Democrat Mike Coleman, arm in arm, so to speak, with the governor, Republican, obviously. What do you make of that, Joe?
It's not the first time.
No. Nope.
I mean, they've done a lot together. And, you know, that basically what the event was, it was a match or they've got this new program under the state mm-hmm. where if a community, the business leaders, the churches, the drivers of that community put in money to help, you know, further a preschool education, early childhood education program, then the state will kick in. Money and it's a 3-to-1 match on it. So that's what's basically happening here in Columbus is the school that they were at last week, the city of Columbus is putting in money and then the state's putting in money and they were it's the first school in the state under this program that's got this match going and the hope is that more schools will go out and get that kind of thing. Early childhood education seems to be one of those issues that Republicans and Democrats agree on most of the time anyway at the State House. We don't hear too many of them arguing, you know, we don't need this. If they're arguing, it's because they're arguing about how to pay for it. But most Republicans and Democrats, it's kind of a bipartisan issue for them, the need for early childhood education.
Mm-hmm. However, this could not have made the Ed Fitzgerald campaign happy to see this. I know they publicly came out and said, look, Fitzgerald said, look, I know the mayor has to work with the governor and they do things together. So he kind of said, that's no big deal. But you couldn't possibly look at this politically, purely politically, if you're a Democrat and particularly one with the Fitzgerald campaign and not be a bit peeved by all this because, you know, Columbus was getting this money. Mayor Coleman did not have to invite Governor Kasich to a press conference and stand arm in arm with them and talk about it. I know that the mayor and the governor have done things in the past and mm-hmm. have a relationship together on working on some issues as particularly related to the schools. But it was a little surprising, I think, to many of us who are watching the campaigns and the race and just knowing from a political standpoint that normally at this, you know, in this kind of a election year, you normally don't see a Democratic mayor of the state's largest city getting up and inviting the Republican governor in so close to the election.
So what do you make of it?
I don't know.
I think they work well together and they like to talk about working well together. Mm-hmm. I've seen them together at several different events just in the past few months.
It gives me a feeling that Mike Coleman's going to, you know, go for another gold ring, run again.
Oh, the Fitzgerald campaign responded to the whole thing by sending out one thing that they sent out was the minute this was announced, it almost seemed like it took them by surprise a little bit, this press conference. And when it was announced, there was an, in case you missed it, Coleman has endorsed Fitzgerald, you know, and talked a lot about Fitzgerald's pre-K for the whole state, mm-hmm. Preschool. For the whole state plan, because the Kasich administration has been reticent to throw a whole lot of statewide money into early childhood education, just from a, you know, how are we going to pay for this? Mm-hmm. Is this really worth it? There are several Republican leaders who are in favor of it, but Kasich is not one who is in favor right now of statewide early childhood. So the campaign was trying to draw the distinction and almost say for Coleman, like, okay, you like this plan, but you really would prefer if Fitzgerald's plan were in place and we did this all across the state, you know.
Right.
And
you could have had that, you know, mayor could have had that press conference. He could have invited mm-hmm. Ed Fitzgerald in and they could have talked about this money and Ed Fitzgerald could have gotten up mm-hmm. and talked about how he wants to do even more. But that's not the way it went.
That's
again,
right.
I have no inside knowledge as to why the mayor chose to do it the way he did. But mm-hmm. but I know from, you know, politically, it didn't have to be that way.
And he and Kasich both said, as they've said at past events, statements that basically sounded like, yeah, we're up on stage all together, together all the time. Isn't that great? And, you know, this is the way politics should work. Democrats and Republicans working together. This is not the line that one uses You know, what
like
are we, 100? We're like 100 days before the election right now.
So. Okay, you said that, like, not us.
Yeah, but it's so unusual.
You know, the thing that keeps coming back to me is, sometimes I watch things that happen politically, and I think, you know, we've got to remember that Kasich, at least from all the indicators, money and the major polling, it looks like he's far ahead. And it looks like this is going to be a big election for him. Now, there have been some polls recently that show Ed Fitzgerald closer, but right now, if you were going to hold the election today, I think you would find it very hard to find anyone who follows politics who would say that Ed Fitzgerald would win. And, you know, I think the normal thing for everyone is to hitch their cart to the winner. You know, and so it doesn't really surprise me that we're seeing Mike Coleman and Governor Kasich together in these, you know, events, because that's the person he thinks he's probably going to be working with, if he's honest, at least at this point.
Martha in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Martha.
Hi. I have a comment about the college savings. Mm-hmm. I missed the very beginning, but you might be referring to the 529 savings plan.
We did not.
Is that's different than what Fitzgerald wants to do?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. He's got his own program where he puts in 100 and they put in 100.
No, the student doesn't have to put in anything. It's just
they just kick it off with 100 and that's it.
So it's not the same as the plan where you can save and everything you're saving for college eventually would be used for a state college. And it's taxed. It comes off your taxable income.
No, that's a different plan.
That's a different plan.
Fitzgerald's plan. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But you had a good experience with the.
I have had a great experience with the 529 plan. I use them for my kids, and I'm actually still using it now for my grandkids. So I would recommend people do that.
Okay.
A little bit of savings goes a long way.
It helps. No question about that. Thanks a lot, Martha.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye bye. Once again, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's get into this charter school oversight issue. The State Board of Education has ordered an investigation of a chain of 19 charter schools in response to allegations of test cheating, attendance tampering, improper sexual conduct, and other problems. The state auditor, Dave Yost, started an investigation as well. Apparently some of the allegations were made a long time ago. Why the wait? What do we know about that, for starters? Anything?
I don't think anybody has really said why the things weren't investigated before.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they're investigated now because a group, Progress Ohio, a progressive group, and some others aligned with the Democrats, basically got a lot of media attention drawn to four teachers who went to the State Board of Education recently and basically laid out these problems in front of the State Board. And that got the State Board all riled up and upset, and they started with the TV cameras and other reporters in the room. They
tried to block, by the way. They did briefly try to close the meeting, right?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
I wasn't there either.
It got attention. It got the board's attention, and now they're moving to investigate. But this is an ongoing issue. Not just with Horizon, but this whole issue of charter school oversight is one that continually comes up as a problem, and not just because in this instance where you have allegations of cheating and inappropriate conduct by students, but financial problems. You have concerns about charter schools that pop open, spend a couple million, and then immediately shut down. And the sponsors, are they doing a good job with oversight? Are we doing a good job evaluating the sponsors? Are we doing a good job of we don't do a good job of requiring the books to be open in terms of how this money's being spent by these management companies that come in and run these schools. So there's still continues just to be a lot of questions about just charter school oversight in general that continue to hound the system, this $900 million system. And this is just the latest example in a pretty prominent one.
Well, what about the oversight of charter schools? Wasn't there anything written into the laws regarding charter schools that would cover oversight?
A little bit. There wasn't. They are not facing the scrutiny that a public school district has.
And that was part of the deal, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, part of the reason charter schools say they're effective, a big reason is that they don't have the encumbrances of a public school district. That being said, they also don't have the accountability of the public school district. The public school district has to have, meetings are open to the public. They have to provide a lot of feedback. They have to, you know, where their money's going and their policies, how things are spent. Charter schools, none of that was really written into the initial law. And while over time, they have tried to tighten it a bit so that charter schools have more accountability. It's still nowhere near the public school district as far as accountability is concerned.
There's just been problems too with some of these schools. The students don't perform well.
Yeah.
So some of them they do, but I think of it from a perspective of a parent. These schools open, and you know that your child it's not working for them at their oftentimes urban public school, right? It's not, they're poor performing. The school you feel like is chaotic, and you say, I gotta find a new solution for my student. And you hear about these charter schools that open up, and you think, this is it. This is something new. They all have some new philosophy, right? There's a philosophy or an approach that each one of them has that's mm-hmm. different. And you send your kids to these schools, and sometimes the kids walk in and there are no books in the school, or things like that happen. Now, we have problems in public education as well, but a lot of these charter schools are measurably not making any difference between what would happen at that, and
if they had stayed in public or whatever.
Right, it takes money away from we're paying for these schools.
Well, these schools, the Horizon schools, have received nearly $50 million in tax money.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they get state money to do these things.
A statement by the charter school operator said that, like any public charter school, we are accountable to the families we serve. Are they not accountable to the taxpayers who fund them?
They should be. And that statement has drawn attention because of that very fact that they talk about being accountable to the parents, but not being accountable to the folks paying millions and millions of dollars to run those schools. And that is a problem. And it's a continuing problem. Again, it's not just Horizon who has that view. I mean, mm-hmm. there's other charter school operations out there who just feel like they should not come under the kind of scrutiny and should not have to open up their books, Politically, it's the Republicans started up charter schools because they thought folks should have a choice, and they should have better choices than maybe the urban districts that they're going to, in particular the ones that are failing. But choices that aren't good are don't have much meaning. And so if you want to have good choices, and one of the problems that have been is that there's been this fight over should we have charter schools, should we not? Well, that fight is pretty much over. I mean, we've got hundreds of charter schools spending, like I said, $900+ million a year. I think the debate, and I think Democrats would do themselves a favor to probably move this debate away from whether or not we should have charter schools and move it toward more
how to oversee
them, how mm-hmm. to make sure they're accountable, how to make sure that the bad ones cannot remain open, how to make sure that if you close one that the sponsor cannot immediately turn around and open up one under a different name, mm-hmm. things of that nature.
There has been pressure along those lines, and the state board. State Board of Ed, which is part of the Kasich administration, the Department of Education, mm-hmm. which is part of the Kasich administration, has responded in some ways. There have been a couple of instances in the past year, for instance, where they put a lot of pressure on a charter school sponsor saying, we need to get a new sponsor for the school. If you continue to open schools, we will do something to punish you. I don't remember quite all the details, but there have been some responses. And this is also, interestingly, so far, Democrats' big education play for the 2014 election. Ed Fitzgerald, David Pepper, John Patrick Carney have all come out with charter school-related proposals related to oversight mostly. And this is the most specific thing that we've heard from them related to education. We have the generic restore cuts to schools, but as far as specific policy proposals, this is the big play for Democrats. And remember that teachers' unions don't like charter schools because they take away money that could be going to, you know, public schools. So,
well, they're not unionized.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Right. Big reason why they can operate more cheaply. I want to talk a little bit more about this after a break. But first, I want to let people know we got a couple emails from folks thinking that Ed Fitzgerald's college saving plan means a guaranteed $100 per month. It does not. It is just $100 in seed money per student.
Right.
So it's $100 per student. That's it. Just so everybody knows, in case we've confused anybody, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. It is Monday. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. My guest, Jim Siegel from The Dispatch, Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Enquirer, and Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. We were talking about two investigations now, one by the State Board of Education and another by the State Auditor's Office into a chain of 19 charter schools, the Horizon Group, in response to allegations of test cheating, attendance tampering. That sounds familiar. It should, regarding Columbus City Schools. Also improper sexual conduct and other problems. The group, the Horizon, the organization that owns Horizon, gives money to Ohio politicians. It sponsored trips for Ohio lawmakers, including city lawmakers, state lawmakers, to visit Turkey. Any indication that the group has gotten special treatment because of its political activities? And what about these charter groups giving money to state lawmakers? Is it just good civic duty to contribute to the campaigns of?
There's no civic duty in donating campaign contributions. Let's not go down that path.
Yeah.
But but I will say the fact that they do these kind of things does not make them an anomaly.
Right.
Two of the biggest contributors to Republican campaigns, particularly in the legislature, are David Brennan, who runs White Hat Management, the largest charter school operator in the state, and Bill Lager, William Lager, who runs ECOT, which is the now really large online school, charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Lager is now, I think, far surpassed Brennan. Brennan's kind of slowed down some of his contributions, particularly to the Senate, which I think angered him a few years ago with some of their moves. It's not unusual for charter schools to get into the campaign donation business, and they have. And you mentioned Turkey. The reason that's done is because these are the folks running this are Turkish scientists. They've come over here, and that's part of some of the allegations are that they're improperly using these schools to get folks into the country from Turkey
as teachers,
and that the Turkish teachers are getting improper favorable treatment and that type of thing. So that's all part of the investigation, which also, by the way, involves the FBI. The FBI is also involved, along with the Department of Education and the Auditor of State. So
yeah, the FBI has raided some locations in Chicago. And are there any in our state also that have Indianapolis, I believe? And
I'm not aware of any raids here, but that doesn't mean doesn't happen.
I know that I saw that Toledo Blade had an article where their local schools, Toledo has several of these up in their area, and had been notified by the parent company not to shred anything because the whole organization was under investigation and they might need some documents. So. Which that's the proper way to comply with an investigation if that's really what they're telling people. So that's good. What exactly the FBI is looking for, I'm not sure that we 100% know, but there is some perhaps shady things are happening with the money are some of the allegations out there. So
yeah, hopefully they can find out, like we have no
access to their records. So it's very hard for us when we're doing a charter school story to actually know where their spending is and what they're doing, because we, you know, I'm sure the FBI has much more access. So,
Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Ann. I am interested in the question of where are they now for some of these Columbus Board of Education members who were implicated as perhaps being part of the problems with oversight when the original internal auditor's report came out. Particularly Andrew Genser was president of the board at that time, and I believe Carolyn Perkins. I'm not positive of that name. I can't recall for sure, but I'm curious as you know where these people are who had something to do with enabling the problems to continue, and you know have perhaps not been held to account in the same way that, say, the principals have who were terminated, or other staff members like Tankovich who were terminated. I'm wondering kind of where are they now, because honestly, it impacts, you know, my thoughts about, you know, voting and so forth. I don't believe that any of those people should be entrusted with public service in the future.
Jim Siegel?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I know many of them aren't with the district anymore. They're not on the board right. anymore. They're not in the district. You know, they're not employed by the schools. Unfortunately, I'm not the city politics guy, so I don't know where they are in particular, to you know what they went on to do from there. But a lot of them are out, and yeah, it was a definite oversight problem that you could do a whole nother show on.
But, we have.
And I'm sure you have, and probably will do it again. But yeah, that's about all I can tell you about okay. that.
Sorry, Chris. Joe, did you?
No, I'm like Jim. I don't cover that beat, so I'm not really okay. sure. But
sorry about
one
that.
Thing I did want to say is we're doing a lot of beating up on charter schools, and there's one thing that charter schools have done. For some students, they have provided a lot of opportunity for flexibility. And we've seen it also since the advent of charter schools. We've seen school districts actually create their own charter schools, which is totally different than the ones we're talking about mm-hmm. here. But it's really up the game for students. If you look at the OSU, Battelle, Columbus City
the
School,
Metro
School,
yeah.
that school is very effective if you look at the numbers and the way it operates. Would that have come about had we you know, not had this advent of charter schools? It's hard to tell, but I think they have upped the game substantially for some other schools.
Okay. Chris, thanks a lot for that call. Sorry we couldn't help you out better, but we will be covering the issue in the months to come, I'm sure. If you have a question or comment, we still have a few minutes left. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from a listener who writes, I predict that Kasich will be the Republican nominee for president. Mayor Coleman may think that as well. Perhaps that's why he is working with the governor in such a positive way.
That's
kind of the point I was trying to make. Yeah.
Well, that's kind of now that's a step beyond. And I'm not. I mean, I don't know. I may, you know, like you said, I'm more inclined to believe
the governor hasn't shared his plans with
right.
him.
Well, and I'm more inclined to believe what Joe was saying earlier, that maybe you know you hit your horse to the winner, mm-hmm. Or the person you think is going to be the winner, and maybe that's more of it. But I don't
one
know.
Election.
I find it hard
time.
To believe that the mayor of Columbus thinks that you know that. The guy who hasn't even been reelected governor yet will one day be president. So therefore, I'm going to invite him to my press conference. I don't know if that might be a bit of a reach.
Yeah. If your listener who wrote that email thinks that Kasich is the front runner for the Republican nomination for president, I mean, that's not what any other presidential insider
he's not
would
even
say.
Close. No.
He's usually in the second or third tier. Right. Every once in a while, he's mentioned a little higher. But it's not common, and he has some similarities with Chris Christie. I think kind of the verdict is out, or it's not out.
It's still out.
Right, on whether what's going to happen with Chris Christie. I mean, they are kind of buddies, or they want to act like they are, at least, you know, similar styles, and they like that. But, I don't think that at this point in time, you know, America is looking to John Kasich. So we'll see, but... Things could change.
There's a lot of time between now and 2016 for that to all shape up. And I don't know that there is a Republican right now who is showing to be, you know, looking like the front runner. At this point, if you want to tell me that you think John Kasich is going to run for president and has a good shot at being the nominee, I will I'll nod my head and say sure, because why not?
Who else
is out there? I mean, and that's, you know, if you looked at the race in 2012 for the Republicans, that was part of their issue. You know, every 2 weeks there was another front runner, and that was part of their problem, is no one could gain a good footing. And if we see that kind of situation again, you know, why not John Kasich if he wins re-election, and the state's economy doesn't do something completely screwy, then you know, he's from a swing state, and you know, you could, I think the party could do worse.
He garners a lot of national respect, and I think that, you know, while he's never in the top tier of mentioned candidates, he's never one that's counted out either, and so comes from an influential state. I don't see him as the front runner right now, but I do see him as on his way up. And if I'm Mayor Coleman and I'm looking at, you know, the future and what I want to have a good working relationship with Governor Kasich. And I think, you know, that's probably where he's looking at it. You know, hey, I need to really stay in good with Governor Kasich, because this is my future.
One of the problems has been that he does, he's numbered among more of the moderate part of the party, not what someone would have said maybe 5 or 10 years ago, mm-hmm. about him, but right. but compared to some of the options out there, and no matter what, you mm-hmm. still have to get through a Republican primary to get the nomination.
There's a lot of things that are going to happen in the next few months, I think, that are going to determine whether we can keep that moderate label on John Kasich. For instance, there's buzz about will right to work move mm-hmm. in the legislature.
Anti-union right to work.
That's yeah. right. Will that move in the legislature in lame duck? You know, and the question, of course, as you said, is can the Republican nominee get through the national primary cycle, you know, winning the hearts and minds of conservatives, and then be honestly moderate enough to win the national election. So, you know, if Kasich does not get himself involved in right to work, or, and, you know, if the legislature doesn't move anything, or if Kasich even vetoes something, right? Okay, he has stayed moderate, but can he then, you know, get conservatives on board to mm-hmm. to win a nomination? We've got a lot that needs to play out in the next year or two to see what happens.
Gail in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I would be curious if any of your guests know about the financing end of Kasich's campaign. It was all over the news that Christie and Kasich went to Las Vegas to kiss the ring of Sheldon Adelson. And I would be curious to know how many thousands of dollars Sheldon Adelson contributed to Kasich's campaign.
Okay. All right, Gail. Sheldon Adelson, of course, being the casino mogul out in Las Vegas. Has he given him any money? Some, but
he's given quite a bit, but particularly to the Republican Governors Association.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how the money ends up funneling through to Governor Kasich. But I just don't know. It's been a while since I've looked at that yeah. and read those stories, so I don't want to give any numbers because I don't remember them very well. Mm-hmm. But I do think he's given some direct money to Kasich, but I know he's given mm-hmm. a lot more to some of these other groups that are going to help Governor Kasich in the upcoming election here.
If I recall, after the meeting with him, the next financial report showed a little bit of money. I don't believe he maxed out to Kasich, but...
Personally, but that would explain the Republican Governors Association spending on Kasich the campaign, and
right, they definitely are helping him out. So,
right.
and you know, the RGA, like any other group, expects if we're going to help you, then you're going to help us raise money, so that, you know, we're not simply donating. You know, if everyone just takes and no one gives, then
right,
the RGA
right.
runs out of money very quickly.
Kasich is a good fundraiser,
and he is. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
yes.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. There's more to talk about, and. Coming up next week, you'll carry on without me. Stu Nicholson will be sitting in for me next week. So thanks for joining us today. Jim Siegel from the Columbus Dispatch, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it was good to be here.
And Chrissy Thompson from the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Pleasure as always.
Joe Ingles from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks
always great to be
us.
Here. Always a good time.
Thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.